All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to Third String Podcast. I am going to be joined on this episode by Pete LaCleed, and we're going to talk about some of the storylines that you need to hear in the sports world, including Urban Meyer. That's the focus of our topic today. We're going to talk about a few other football storylines as well and do some recap from Hall of Fame weekend, things like that. It's a really good conversation, and I'm excited to get to it, but I just wanted to give a shout out to a couple other things that I think you should know. First of all, Third String is only one podcast on a network. That's the Vernacular Podcast Network, and there's lots of other good content that you should hear. If you're a basketball fan, this is not the podcast for you. This is a baseball and football podcast, but we do have a podcast for you that is The Takes of the Game, hosted by Taylor Young and often hosted with Taylor by Ishan Nath as well. And those guys, two of the most knowledgeable basketball fans I know, love breaking down the game from all angles, and it's a pleasure to listen to that. So go check that out, The Takes of the Game, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you're into pop culture in addition to sports, you can listen to The Popcast. That's hosted by Josh and Maureen Goldman, a husband-wife duo who love talking about pop culture, and will give you everything you need to know about new music and movies and celebrity storylines, all kinds of things that you don't want to miss. So tune in to The Popcast for movie reviews, music previews, all kinds of stuff. I'm going to be on an episode coming up with Josh and Pete, actually, talking about baseball movies. That'll be later this August. Josh has been busy setting that up. But in the meantime, they have a weekly episode, all things pop culture. It's a lot of fun. And there's also the Vernacular Podcast, which is one that I host with my wife, Sally, and we talk about many different facets of life and how they all have to do with being human. So most recently, we talked about disability and body diversity and what that means and how to talk to your kids about disability, how to raise a child with a disability. We bring on a guest to talk to us about that. So lots of really good conversations. We've talked about food. We've talked about sports. We've talked about medicine. We've talked about various issues in bioethics. We've talked about spending time outdoors, all of these very diverse but interesting things that help us, we think, learn how to be humans and how to be humans effectively and how to live the good life in Aristotle's formulation of eudaimonia. But anyway, that's enough for me. I think it's time to talk about Urban Meyer, move on to the sports world, but just wanted to encourage you, check out the Vernacular Podcast Network, lots of good content, and we're pushing it out every single week. So tune into those other podcasts. In the meantime, here is Third String Podcast. All right, so Pete, I don't want to spend too much time today. I want to keep it pretty short. I know you've got to run as well, but I think we have to talk about this Urban Meyer stuff. I know you wanted to do an emergency pod when the news first broke a few days ago, but
yeah.
Real quick, can you give a recap of what's happened with Urban Meyer, and then we can talk about it?
Yeah, so we can... I mean, we could go all the way back to 2009 if we wanted, but I think what is more relevant to our listeners right now is July 24th at Big Ten Media Day, Urban Meyer was asked 8 different times about the possibility of one of his assistant coaches being involved in a domestic violence incident that possibly had the police involved, possibly did not. I think the biggest takeaway was Urban Meyer was adamant that he was not involved in this whatsoever, had no knowledge of anything going on, and then... like seems to happen so often here in 2018 with sports, as the threads kept getting pulled, the coach became a lot more culpable. So on, what was it, Wednesday, I'm thinking, Ohio State came out and put Urban Meyer on a leave of absence as the story actually broke about his assistant, Zach Smith. On Friday, Zach Smith was on ESPN, and Urban Meyer also put out a personal statement. Where this got even more interesting is that personal statement essentially was diming out the Ohio State athletic director, saying that back in 2015, when these allegations surfaced, he notified the athletic director, who Zach Smith, as the associate coach, confirmed the athletic director knew because he was pulled off the recruiting trail during an Ohio State bye week. So it seems that every day that goes by, we're learning a little more about this. The reporting was done at truly an expert level by Britt McMurphy, who used to work for ESPN, now is completely independent. And I'll post a link to this on my Twitter, a fascinating interview with him about his leaving ESPN and how he's doing independent reporting, but broke this story on his Facebook. As he broke the story on Facebook, Urban Meyer was very adamant about someone making up a story. And then as Urban Meyer continued to defend himself in the coming days, Brett McMurphy was posting things like text messages between the assistant coach, Zach Smith, and his wife, Courtney, who is the alleged victim of this domestic violence, and just back and forth. And Urban Meyer has admitted that he lied to the media at Big Ten Media Day. But overall, I don't really know how Ohio State is going to keep both their athletic director and Urban Meyer in the seat right now, because this is something that is not only part of the Ohio State code, but it's actually in Urban Meyer's contract that he's required to elevate all these issues. So while he elevated it to his athletic director, he still had knowledge this was going on, possibly as far back as 2009. So it is a convoluted web of kind of alternative facts, it seems, coming out of Columbus right now in Ohio. But Zach, what are your first impressions on the disaster that is the Ohio State football program's coaching staff right now?
Yeah, I think you said it, Pete. It's a really convoluted timeline and sequence of events, and it's tough to figure out exactly what is going on. But the big question is, who knew what and when? And you mentioned that Urban Meyer has been placed on paid leave while an independent group conducts an inquiry to see if there was any wrongdoing on his part. But you're right. I think someone's going to have to pay for this, someone beyond Zach Smith, who is the alleged domestic violence offender in this case. And Urban Meyer, I'm looking at his statement right now. You mentioned his Big Ten Media Day appearance, where he was asked about these allegations against Zach Smith, and he said that he didn't know about them in 2015. No one ever told him. Come to find out, he did. And that was, we found that out in part from the interview with Zach Smith and McMurphy's reporting. Besides that, and then Urban Meyer put out that statement. He says, here's the truth. While at the University of Florida and now at the Ohio State University, I've always followed proper reporting protocols and procedures when I have learned of an incident involving a student athlete, coach, or member of our staff, by elevating the issues to the proper channels. And I did so regarding the Zach Smith incident in 2015. I take that responsibility very seriously, and any suggestion to the contrary is simply false. The weird thing is, just, I think my first question is, why did he lie in the first place? If he's saying that he did nothing wrong and he reported it to the proper channels, then why did he feel the need to lie at Big Ten Media Day? And then the second thing is, if he knew this was going on, why did Zach Smith remain employed as an Ohio State coach? Because he wasn't fired until, I think, 2 weeks ago now, July 23rd, I think is the date.
Yeah, right before Urban showed up at Big Ten Media Day. Yeah, within a day or two of that.
And then the statement of, or the portion of the Meyer statement that I thought was really just really kind of lame, was you said, "The power of what I say and how I say it, especially regarding sensitive and serious domestic issues, has never been more evident than now. My words, whether in a reply to a reporter's question or in addressing a personal issue, must be clear, compassionate, and most of all, completely accurate. Unfortunately, at Big Ten Media Day on July 24th, I failed on many of these fronts." So he's saying he failed on those fronts to be clear, compassionate, and most of all, completely accurate. But he's not even saying that I was inaccurate, or I lied, or I was not transparent, I was not honest. It's just seems like a very lame way that is still him trying to avoid responsibility. Like, just be upfront and say that you were not truthful with media in answering the question, and you maybe say that's, whatever the reason is, but say it. If that's because you just weren't prepared to answer the question, you were blindsided by the question, you needed to check up and review what had happened in 2015. I mean, say all that, but don't just say that you failed to be completely accurate. I mean, that's just, go ahead.
If he had just said something like, "No comment," we immediately think, oh, Urban knew something,
right,
and it's bad. But it's not the same as lying.
Totally.
To say no comment says that you are not in a position to make a comment right then. But he flat out denied it 8 different times,
yeah,
that he was tracking on this.
Yeah, I mean, so, you're right. To say no comment, you think, oh, there's something here, but he's not in a position to comment, to say anything. Maybe just out of concern for the privacy of the people involved, out of deference to the people above him in the chain of command who are handling this matter. I mean, fine, I get it. But to have him lie makes it seem like he's trying to hide something, and I think that's exactly, yeah, what it looks like. And I still remain uncertain about whether or not he is. Now that he's saying he's being totally truthful, I'm honestly not sure.
Totally agree. And honestly, I think Urban Meyer is one of the most brilliant football minds we've had in the collegiate game in a very long time. And you look at his success, and this isn't a surprise to anyone who's listening here, but everywhere he goes, it is a successful program in terms of wins and losses. But my question with all of this right now is, what was it about Zach Smith that was so important to Urban Meyer to keep this guy employed with not one, but two legitimate domestic violence allegations against him, both in 2009 and 2015?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Every program that Urban Meyer has been a part of in the last 15 years, has had some kind of an issue after he left. You look at Utah and how much of a disaster that program was after he left. Very successful while he was there, but in terms of personnel, a disaster as he was leaving. Look at Florida and look at all the discipline issues they had at Florida. I mean, think of one of the guys, Urban Meyer, is he hasn't confirmed, but everyone around him has confirmed that he protected was Aaron Hernandez, who had significant issues with both drugs and violence when he was a student athlete playing for Urban Meyer. And now you look at everything that's unfolding at Ohio State. And at some point, maybe I'm just playing conspiracy theory a little too much, but there is something about the relationship between Urban Meyer and Zach Smith that transcends head coach to assistant coach and maybe even athletic director. There is something else going on in the way Urban Meyer is doing business right now, that it is loyalty to his assistant coaches over any kind of loyalty to a program or a brand or anything else. And it just, I'm sure if he was fired tomorrow, he'd get another job somewhere else very, very quickly. But the way Urban Meyer is doing business right now is football above people, which maybe some programs are okay with that. But I think this could be a real turning point in Urban Meyer's career.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's certainly, you know, in addition to being bad news for Urban Meyer, it's also really bad news for Ohio State, which has a recent history of head coaches concealing unethical or illegal things that are going on and the program suffering for it. Because prior to Meyer taking over was the Tressel issue and the postseason ban. And Urban Meyer came in to rescue the program from that. And I mean, it would be ironic if the program were to suffer again from something similar to that. But honestly, I'm not sure if Urban Meyer keeps his job after this, Pete.
I completely agree. I think Gene Smith, who's the athletic director, probably shouldn't keep his job either if he was tracking on all these issues. What Jim Tressel did was illegal according to the NCAA bylaws, with the knowledge of getting paid for tattoos and all this. But at the end of the day, it was money changing hands with things like tattoos and autographs and memorabilia, right, which again is wrong. But this is domestic violence, and this isn't even one instant of domestic violence. This is a trend. This is surrounding himself with not only people who don't uphold the values of the university, but people who are physically harming other people in the way that they do business, and they are covering it up. This is so much worse than tattoos and memorabilia, in my opinion. Obviously, I don't know all the facts here, and I know people are trying to question Courtney Smith, who's the victim of this, which is way outside the scope here. But either way, this is so much worse than what Jim Tressel was fired for and what Ohio State got a postseason ban for. People thought they should get the death penalty when Jim Tressel was fired. What was that, 2011? People thought they should get the death penalty for that as a program. Where's that conversation now?
Right. No, I think you're absolutely right. Like, and I think what's going to be interesting is to see is how the NCAA responds to this, because this, you know, I think there's a lot to be written here as far as the Me Too moment coming to American sports. And we've seen this in the story, you know, Dallas Mavericks, the Carolina Panthers, and even this, the domestic violence issue. This is very much related to the Me Too moment. And that's really good, because there's a lot of crap that needs to be cleaned out from our sports cultures like this. And I think it'll be really interesting how Ohio State's administration, above the athletic director, above Gene Smith, and also the NCAA more broadly responds to this. I mean, what's the appropriate penalty for a program whose head coach and athletic director were conspiring to conceal conduct like this that would be detrimental to the program, right? So I think that's kind of going to be the big storyline to watch out of this, is this could be defining for a lot of other programs who have had similar issues.
Do you think come Labor Day weekend, Urban Meyer's the guy standing on the sidelines in Columbus?
No, I think this will wrap up more quickly than that. I think by Labor Day. I think if I were betting, I would say 60% he loses his job. I think that either way we'll know by Labor Day. So I think he'll either be on the sidelines coaching, or he'll be gone and looking for employment. And I think it'll also be interesting to see. I mean, you said you think he'll be hired somewhere else immediately. Obviously, we're jumping the gun a little bit. He hasn't been fired yet, but will he receive the Art Briles treatment and basically be unhirable anywhere else? I mean, Art Briles even had an agreement with the CFL team, and they rescinded the offer last minute. Yep. So is that what would happen to Urban Meyer? Would he become sort of untouchable for at least a year or two after this? Or would he be able to take a lower profile job somewhere else?
I think just based on what we know about Urban Meyer with his whole taking, what was that, 2 years or maybe just a year after he left Florida to go to Ohio State, he'll take his year for a leave of absence to clear his head, get himself right physically and mentally is what he'll tell us. And maybe he won't be in a Power 5 program here in a year and a half to 2 years. But think about what our boy Lane Kiffin has done and has shown that you can go to these smaller programs and start rebuilding and fixing your brand and building a culture again exactly the way you want it because you have all the reins. So maybe Urban Meyer doesn't coach a team who's destined for the college football playoff right now, but this isn't the end of him on the sideline, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's probably true. I can see an Urban Meyer to Oregon storyline.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, wouldn't that be interesting.
Anything else on the Urban Meyer question? I think really that's all I have for now. I think we'll just have to watch the story as it develops, but I'm certainly eager to see how it happens. I think something I haven't quite said yet is just whether or not this will be a wake-up call to other programs, because we all know that there's corruption like this in programs. We all know that a lot of illegal and horrible things get ignored when the game is at stake. And I think I think it'll be interesting to see if this is a clarion call to other programs, other athletic directors, other head coaches, that they better not tolerate this type of behavior, because if they do, they're going to be, you know, unemployed.
Yeah. Yeah. What's more important here? The program or the people? Or I'm sorry, the program or the football. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be interesting. Can I ask you one more college football question?
Let's
not
do it.
Urban Meyer related before we jump off?
Yeah.
So Alabama obviously had one of the most interesting title games in history back in January, where Jalen Hurts, who has had a great year and a half, had a miserable first half in the college football playoff championship, for anyone who's forgotten that, benched at halftime, and was still the biggest fan as Alabama went on to win that national championship.
Right.
However, there were interviews down there in Tuscaloosa late this week on Thursday and Friday, where Jalen Hurts was not so positive on the Crimson Tide anymore. And we even saw the, I don't know if you've seen the picture, but it was literally Jalen Hurts in one corner of the north end zone and Tua, I can never say his last name, Tagovailoa, is standing in the other corner of the stadium, and all the players standing in the middle. And Tua was very positive, and Jalen Hurts was very negative on just how the coaches have handled it and how the program overall has handled this quarterback controversy. So my question to you, Zach, who are we going to see on Labor Day weekend under center for the Crimson Tide?
I think it's a good question. I think that, well, first of all, related to the Crimson Tide, I saw that ESPN has a giant puff piece up over the weekend here, right on their homepage, ESPN.com, giant puff piece all about Nick Saban and how wonderful he is. I think that we'll see Tua Tagovailoa again under center. I think one of the main reasons is he's very talented, and based on the national championship game, I think more talented than Jalen Hurts. And nothing against Jalen Hurts. I think he's a very promising athlete, very good quarterback, but I just think Tua has a slightly higher upside. And the second reason is I don't think Jalen Hurts gets rewarded for speaking out about this. I think he was a great teammate. He was a great cheerleader in the second half of the national championship. But with his recent comments, he's showing himself to not quite be that same personality after the fact. And I'm not blaming him for that either. I think if I were in his shoes, I too would be very frustrated. And I don't think that Saban is above reproach for the way he's handled this quarterback controversy. But I just don't see Saban, listening to the or reading this interview and thinking, you know what, Jalen, you're right. I haven't handled this well. Thanks for criticizing the program publicly. Here's your starting job back. So I'm gonna go ahead and go out on a limb here and say that's going to be Tua who's starting opening weekend. What about you?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you just because there was so much debate over Jalen Hurts even going into the offseason. What's just so interesting about this is Nick Saban controls the message, I would say, as well as Bill Belichick does in the NFL in terms of the collegiate atmosphere. I mean, no one owns the message coming out of the locker room and coming out of a program like Nick Saban does in the landscape. And what Jalen Hurts did is said word for word, I'm reading it here, the coaches can't control the situation. I mean, yes, they can, but what kind of a statement is it? And I think a lot of this goes back to Nick Saban saying when he was asked if Jalen Hurts would be on this team in 2018, I think that was at SEC Media Day, he said, I have no idea. And I think that is where a lot of the wheels started coming off this relationship. But I think it was pretty clear this offseason that the relationship between Nick Saban and Jalen Hurts was not airtight. We look at some of the other famed Alabama quarterbacks over the past few years who seem to be eating out of Nick Saban's hand. We don't get that impression here with Jalen Hurts. And good on him that he's still kind of being his own man. But I think it might find him out of Tuscaloosa here pretty soon. And let's be honest, so many teams would give up five starters and a red shirt to get him immediately. But I think he's going to be looking for another program, maybe not here in 2018, but when he has a disappointing 2018 playing in the second half against the powder puff teams who Alabama plays outside of the SEC, I think he'll be looking for a new team in 2019.
Yeah, I think you're right. He'll do the graduate transfer thing. I think he graduates in January, so he'll be ready to do that. And I agree. I think he'll move on next year.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see a Russell Wilson type thing where when the program decides that he's not the starter, he's going to go reinvent himself somewhere else. I mean, when you think of Russell Wilson as a collegiate player now, what school do you think of him coming out of?
NC State.
So he was at NC State, and NC State was, I would argue, mediocre with him. But then he went to Wisconsin, and nobody saw that coming. And that's the only reason he made it in the NFL, right? I mean, out of NC State, he was drafted in baseball. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see where Jalen Hurts goes in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, you talk to the NC State guys, though, and they claim him like they saw him all along. You know, they don't remember him as the guy that it had to transfer out because he thought he'd be more appreciated in Wisconsin. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah. And I just looked up his stats. I mean, his QB rating at NC State in 2008, 9 and 10, 133.9, 147.8, 127.5. Definitely good. Right. Average yards per attempt, his highest season until then was 8.3, or adjusted yards per attempt rather, with 11 interceptions, 31 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. His senior year, Wisconsin, adjusted yards per attempt of 11.8, his highest by far, 33 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions for a 191.8 rating. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, yeah, maybe Jalen Hurts will do that. You know, Jalen Hurts will go play for, I'd love to see him come to the Big Ten, go be an Iowa Hawkeye maybe, or go take the reins from Trace McSorley at Penn State, go play there for a year and then be drafted.
It'll be interesting. It almost, obviously this is much more divisive and toxic than what your Eagles are dealing with, but it's that age-old question of, does the guy who got you there get the nod, or does the guy who got you the championship get the nod? And obviously we know the way Philadelphia is going with Carson Wentz, but boy, I'm not jealous of the decision making the coaches have to do in Tuscaloosa right now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Moving on from football real quick, just some other storylines that I think we should at least give a nod to. Lance McCullers left a game yesterday in the fifth inning with elbow soreness.
Yep.
And, anytime a pitcher has elbow problems, that's something you don't want to deal with. He said he had some weird sensations in his forearm. So the medical follow-ups are not out yet, but people are talking about Tommy John, and I think that'd be potentially a huge blow for an Astros team that has been really good this year, but not as good as people hoped. And I think, going into the year, people thought, you could lose Lance McCullers. Now I think it's less clear that you can lose Lance McCullers and still be favored to win a series against the Indians, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting if Lance McCullers misses this next start, and maybe he just tweaked it and they'll be able to go down to a four-man rotation here for a week and a half. They've got a couple off days coming up and they'll be okay. But if they have to call someone up or bring someone out of the bullpen to do a spot start, do you know what? This is the first time that someone outside of the Astros starting five on opening day will get the nod. That is insane.
That is crazy.
The Astros have had so much health out of that starting five. And unfortunately, it's part of the game that these injuries are going to happen. But like you're saying, it makes you wonder if they've had this solid of a starting rotation in terms of injuries and production, that now they lose one of those five, what's it going to do? And are we going to see a domino effect here? Much like you and I debated, 5-6 days ago with Chris Sale in Boston, will losing a solid guy like Lance McCullers start kind of pulling the thread on the team and start moving stuff in the way the Astros don't want to move?
Right. Yeah, totally agree. And McCullers has not been quite as good as he was last year, but he's definitely been a serviceable starter and a good a good man on that rotation. So he is still a loss for the team going forward. A couple other storylines I wanted to mention real quick. NFL, Kelvin Benjamin, now of the Buffalo Bills, came out and criticized Cam Newton and the Panthers, saying that it was not a good organizational fit for him. He wished he played for an accurate quarterback. And most notably, giving examples of accurate quarterbacks, he listed Aaron Rodgers, fair. Ben Roethlisberger, fair-ish, if we're talking about deep balls at least, and Eli Manning, which I thought was absolutely hysterical, saying, you know, contending that Eli Manning would somehow be a better quarterback for Kelvin Benjamin than Cam Newton was. So, but I thought this was interesting coming out because there is this debate. I think we make too much of it so much of the time. You know, is Cam Newton a premier quarterback in the NFL? Kelvin Benjamin firmly planting his flag on the no side of that debate. What do you think about that?
I don't really know what to think of this situation. So I think we've always kind of perceived that things in Carolina were not as solid and chummy as Carolina tries to portray. You see all the attacks Cam Newton takes, and you see kind of the rifts between some of the upper level coaching echelons there. But I really thought Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin were great friends. You think of, what was that, 4 years ago with his rookie season out there in Carolina, just how incredible that dynamic duo was. It is just interesting to see how much things can split when a player finally leaves a team and isn't afraid to speak out against the team's pseudo leader. So I think Cam Newton is still one of the best athletes out there, but the more we learn about him, the less people get along with him, which, I mean, he's a superstar, and he might not be that top tier of NFL quarterbacks, but he's still a fantastic athlete. So you understand why there's a little ego there, but it's just so interesting how much that relationship that we thought was solid is not solid. So good luck to Kelvin Benjamin up there in Buffalo. I think if he had Tyrod, he'd have a little better season coming up.
Tyrod Taylor fan club. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely have to talk about Tyrod Taylor when we do our NFL previews, which are coming up. We're recording the first of them this weekend, so to our listeners, definitely tune in for that. I think we're going to be starting off with, I think we scheduled AFC, NFC North, so we'll talk about those. But we'll get to the we'll get to all of them eventually, including Tyrod Taylor and his new home in Cleveland. Final NFL story, Pete. Terrell Owens, of course, had his his own Hall of Fame ceremony at his alma mater in Tennessee. He gave a speech about why he was doing this. He was at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. He basically said, you know, actually, let me just read the quote from him. "There's been a lot of speculation and false reports as to why I chose not to be there. I would like to set the record straight. It's not because how many times it took me to be voted to the Hall. It's about the mere fact that the sports writers are not in alignment with the mission and the core values of the Hall of Fame." And then the rest of his speech went on to explain that he knows that they're not in alignment with the mission and the core values because they passed on him multiple times for the Hall of Fame. So he's like, it's not because I wasn't voted in. It's because the sports writers aren't aligned with the Hall of Fame. And you can tell that because they didn't vote me in. So you know, it's just the big TO day. And then my favorite part, I'm looking at this story about the event from ESPN. This fan shouts out, "I love you, T.O. And he responds, "I love you too, but I love me more."
I didn't see that.
T.O., what a great NFL legend. Definitely deserving a place in the Hall of Fame just by the mere fact that there never has been and never will be another Terrell Owens.
Boy, is that the truth. Did you see all the drama about him getting his gold jacket?
And yes,
you know, I don't really blame the Hall of Fame. I think we probably could have handled it a little better, but the Hall said he couldn't get his gold jacket until Saturday. They would put it in the mail on Saturday, but somehow T.O.'s camp was able to talk one of his friends in being able to fly it down from Canton either late Friday night, early Saturday morning, so he could have his gold jacket. But
and he did.
How bizarre.
He donned it for the ceremony. I see the pictures right now, giving a speech in the gold jacket.
Boy, if you look at the list of attendees, I mean, he had 3,000 attendees.
Good on him.
But if you look at the list of attendees, there are no big names whatsoever who attended T.O.'s induction ceremony. And I think it was a little disrespectful to the guys who went into the hall in Canton.
Oh, absolutely.
You think of Randy Moss, the freak. You think of Ray Lewis, who wore a headset mic, which was hilarious to watch, but not surprising in the least.
How about Brian Dawkins, the great Eagle, now a Hall of Fame member?
That's true. We had some good names going in.
We really did.
Fortunately, I don't think T.O. distracted that much. I don't think people really cared what T.O. was doing, if I'm being honest. But it still felt a little disrespectful, just the way that T.O. handled this. But what else is new?
Yeah, totally agree. And we didn't even mention Brian Urlacher. I mean, this was an impressive Hall of Fame class. I mean, honestly, if I were T.O. in a way, I mean, I guess if I were T.O., I'd be T.O. But if I were in T.O.'s shoes, I would be really glad to have been passed over a couple times just so I could enter the hall in the same class as some of these guys like Urlacher and Moss and Dawkins. It'd be pretty cool.
Have you seen any pictures of this induction ceremony yesterday, or did you watch it live by any chance?
I did not watch it live, no. Did you?
No, but I watched some of the replays on NFL Network, and then I was looking at pictures late last night. Did you see the bust of Ray Lewis?
No.
It looks nothing like him. I think it looks more like Warren Moon than it does Ray Lewis. And of all the people for them to screw up the bust, you're like, Ray Lewis, really? That's who we're going to screw up here? So hilarious. Good to see that even the professionals screw it up every so often.
That's hilarious. Yeah, there was a Ronaldo bust. Let me see if I can find this.
Oh,
real quick.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
In the airport or something.
Oh yeah.
Like that?
It's so bad. When it was unveiled, I'm looking at it right now and I can't help but laugh. Yeah, it's really bad. I'll post a link to it in the show notes, but this bust of Cristiano Ronaldo is, absolutely hilarious.
It was rough.
Yeah, it was by an artist named Manuel Santos. It was unveiled at the Madeira airport, and as soon as it came out, the statue was just completely derided because it looked absolutely horrendous. So, and then the artist had to redo it a year later, and now it actually looks decent, but pretty funny. I'll link to it. But I think that's all I had, Pete. Anything else before we head off for the weekend?
No, that was the big stuff on my mind. So thanks for jumping on short notice with me again.
Definitely, man. Good stuff. All right. Well, if you want to keep up with the conversation, you can follow us at Third String Pod or Pete at Pete_Lickfleet. I am at Zach Crippen. And until next week or next weekend when we do the first of our NFL previews, thanks for listening. Have a great week.